Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week, on a special bonus episode of Meat and Three, we find out how Brexit could be changing the way that Brits eat.
If you're not getting your food from the European Union, where Britain gets 30% directly, well, where are you going to get it from? As I put very succinctly, bye-bye fresh peaches from Italy, hello tinned peaches from Florida. Bye-bye fresh oranges, hello tinned oranges. Bye-bye free-range beef, hello hormone-injected beef.
Tune in to hear about the UK's struggle to stabilize its food system on Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and we are broadcasting live from Lisbon, Portugal. Right now, I am sitting in the absolutely adorable restaurant called A Tapas No Mercado, and it is the child of Sonia Maurizio and Pedro Baptista. Sonia, thank you so much for joining us today and taking some time out of your day. So you are obviously a total guru in the sense that you know everything about the Lisbon, you know, food scene. Yeah, well, you've already, in like 2 seconds, you've already answered like 20 questions that most people never think about. So I appreciate that.
I'm just curious.
This
I
is
try
a great
to
quality.
Find the answers to my question. That's
yes.
All.
Same here. That's why I do my radio program. So I want to talk a little bit right now about sort of where your restaurant is located in an old and large open market. It is a covered market, but it's got multiple spaces for all different kinds of vendors, fruits, vegetables, fish. People, you would die if you saw the fish here, honest to God. And the meat, which looks really weird, and we're going to talk about that in a second. it does. Your meat has zero marbling. Zero.
Yeah.
I mean, in America, we prize meat that has fat all the way through it, so it's much more tender and flavorful, frankly, because fat brings flavor.
Yes,
you know that as
obviously.
A cook. But this is like slabs, a roast, standing rib roast that is just like one bright red surface with not one iota of fat running through it.
It has to be with the perception of the consumers about quality. So Portuguese do like to, of course, they like the flavor of the fat of the meat.
Yeah.
But when they buy, they tend to buy less fat meats.
Really?
It's more appealing to. I think it has to do with the perception of quality.
But then by contrast, we have the incredibly widespread consumption of chorizo and sausage, which is larded, literally
which
loaded
we put
with
in
fat.
A different section.
Yeah.
We have the section of the meats and then the section of the sausage.
Yeah, yeah.
So we do classify things in a different way. Meat is something that you eat in a daily basis. Sausage. You used to have to do your cookings, or you do small meals with sausage, but you don't do it every day. You do it, let's say, once a week, twice a week.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, twice a week. In the old days, people, because of the lack of meat or the price of the meats, used to eat more. In our days, we still like them, we love them, but we know it's not exactly the best for our health.
Interesting.
We tend to reduce a bit the quantity.
Yeah.
Not stopping to consume, but reducing to what is considerable wise.
Right. Meanwhile, sausage consumption goes on apace.
Yes. But we are more demanding about the quality, which is good.
Yeah. No, I mean, to be honest with you, we have cooked almost every night. We don't eat a lot out because we're out all day, you know, sightseeing and marching around Lisbon. And by the time you've done a few of those hills, baby, I'm going to tell you.
Yes.
Heading back out into the wilds there.
Lisbon is all up and down,
My Lord. A friend of mine called me from London and she said, are you uphill or downhill?
Yes.
Hilarious. So talk a little bit about the, you mentioned before we started recording, the shouting that went on in the markets. Now, the market, as we see it now, is clearly a shadow of its former glory. But talk a little bit about that tradition of how people would shout out.
I grew up in this neighborhood, so I know this market since I was a child. And it used to be a very busy market. Everything was full. In a Saturday morning, you couldn't even walk inside.
Wow.
Because it was very, very crowded. This street, the streets around it, the larger ones, were allowed to have trucks of farmers selling directly the products to the consumer.
Wow.
Which is not allowed anymore. But it was very popular to come to the market, at least on Saturday morning. Since the women start working out of the house and have their jobs, what happened is that the schedule of the markets are not suitable to our lifestyle anymore.
Wow.
So they only open in the morning from 7 to 2 o'clock.
Yes, I noticed.
2 p.m., which means that for a working person, men or women, it's almost impossible to come to the market. You don't come to the market before going to your job.
No.
You don't have where to store the products. Or even during lunchtime, cannot buy products, fresh products, because then you don't have where to store it.
Right.
So our lifestyle today is not matchable to the schedule of the market. And for that, the decline of the markets, it's here, and for the last, I would say, 15 years, you've seen a huge decline, a very huge decline of the markets.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. You were talking, when we were talking about Time Out Market and how that market had fallen into disrepair, and basically the mayor leased that market out to Time Out, and they sort of renovated it, and we'll talk a little bit about the politics of how they've shunted all the vendors off to the side. But why, if the mayor can do something like that, why can't he change the timing of the markets? Why would people not...
It has to be with a lot of factors. For instance, the vendors... They say they cannot extend the schedule due to the way they buy their products. They have to buy it out of Lisbon, where the central gross market is installed. And the schedule for that market, which is a bit far from Lisbon, it's not matchable. They need to go there very early in the morning. So at around
like 3 or 4 in the morning?
Yes, 3, 4, 5 a.m. And they cannot then extend their day.
I see.
And because it's an old culture of family business, they don't have the habit of contracting employees.
Very interesting.
If you look at the vendors here, it's always within the family. So husband and wife, probably one of their sons or daughters that wants to pick the business. It's a tough life.
Yeah.
It is a tough life. It's like agriculture. You get up very early in the morning.
Yes.
You don't have exactly free time. So the young generations don't want to have that kind of life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the vendors see the business in a very conservative way.
Uh-huh.
And it's very difficult for them to accept hiring people.
Yeah, because, for example, in Madrid, where we were last year, we had two big markets like this within a couple of blocks of where we were staying. And although they were clearly in decline as well, they had the markets closed from 2 to 5. And then they were open again from 5 to 7 or 9.
In some regions of Portugal, you see that already. For instance, in the south, Algarve, uh-huh. In the south, they are trying that, and apparently it's not working bad. So
right.
They decided to open the market also after 5 p.m. And some vendors did support that idea, but not all of them. So, for instance, you can have the fruit and vegetable going forward with that schedule, but you don't have the fish.
Yeah.
Fish is almost impossible to meet that schedule.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Can we talk a little bit about the fishing industry, because fish is such a major part of the Portuguese diet? Mm-hmm. How are you guys managing your fisheries here? Because in the United States, we've had a lot of conflict with both the fishermen and, competing interests, and we have the big consolidation of fishing fleets that are driving the small fishermen out of business. There's that. And then we have a program called Catch Share, mm-hmm. Which was phased in sometime in the 80s, which a lot of fishermen are not happy with, but that seemed to be better in terms of preserving fishing stock.
Preserving the species, yes.
So how does Portugal manage its fishing fleet?
Portugal is within the European Union rules.
Yeah.
They do have quotas, of course.
They have quotas.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's distributed according to the sea coasts, of
sure.
course, the fleets.
Yeah.
Yes. The biggest problem in Portugal is specifically with the sardines.
Uh-huh.
Because the consume of sardines is very, very, very high.
Yeah.
And apparently you see a decline on the species.
Right. Well, what about cod? Because cod is also your
cod is
staple.
From Nordic seas.
Yeah, it's not indigenous
to this area.
Not.
So basically we do have our share of quote, and we have the fleets that go there. So.
Yeah.
Huh. And we do import a lot of cod from Norway.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah, right. You must, because...
I've heard some say that we're probably the highest importer of cod fish.
I would think
Norway.
So, because I have literally never seen so many opportunities to consume bacalao
yes.
in every single form, like an unbelievable number of forms.
At some stage, it was the octopus in Portugal.
Ah.
Then it was substituted by the cod fish.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
In the old days, it was the
pulpo. Yeah, fascinating. And now let's talk a little bit about the regional products that you use in your restaurant and your menu, which I noticed doesn't have bacalao.
No. Yeah.
Much to our relief.
And even we don't work with fish at
yeah.
all. And the reason is because we decided we've I'm from Lisbon and my husband is from the south. But my fathers-in-law are from the highest mountain in the Portugal continental,
uh-huh.
which is Serra da Estrela. And we lived there for 4 years. My husband, 7, me for 4 years. And we basically love the cheese from that region.
Yeah.
And the sausage. And it's probably one of the regions in Portugal where you still preserve the old recipes of doing the sausage.
Right.
So the quality of the sausage is fantastic, is way better than in another region. Although you have the opposite side, which is the lower production. So most of those products, you don't find them out of that region.
Right.
Because they don't produce enough to distribute to the whole country. So for us, opening a small restaurant was an opportunity to bring those products, because we will never demand the amount of products that are out of the range they can produce. So
right, sure, of course.
During these 4 years, we established contact with the small producer. We selected the ones we wanted to bring. It was a very interesting trying. It wasn't... yes. Trying food is always good.
Yeah.
So we found the right providers for our sausage
yeah.
and with the quality we want. and with the safe conditions, the food safe conditions
right.
we wanted.
Of course, yeah.
And for the cheese as well.
Yeah.
And
your cheese is made from sheep's milk primarily?
Yes.
Sheep, goat, cow?
No, just sheep's.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, just sheep milk. And it's two or three specific species of sheep's that they eat specifically kind of herbs
uh-huh.
from the mountain.
Fantastic.
So the flavor of the cheese and the way it's made, it's... totally different from other cheese you can find.
Well, we're going to be sampling that cheese.
Yes.
You can be better. We're cheeseaholics.
The most famous form of the cheese is the melty one.
Yes.
So it's very creamy inside. Normally, in a restaurant, we have to store it in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
At your house or at your home, you don't store it in the refrigerator.
Oh, my God. Pedro was reading our mind.
A small sample.
Obviously.
A small sample.
Thank you so much. My gosh. You can hear our plates being set. This is so exciting. And with the special honey and the special something else.
It's a jam, a red pepper jam.
That you make.
No, it's made also in the mountains, in a small factory in the mountains.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Fantastic.
And pumpkin sweet. Very traditional,
yeah. Yeah, we mix a lot of pumpkin sweet with the cheese.
Pumpkin
sweet.
Really?
In the north. One of the most famous desserts we have in that region is the fresh sheep milk cheese named Requeijão. Requeijão, it's the name.
Requeijão.
It's very similar. When you try it, you'll see it's very similar to the ricotta, the Italian ricotta.
Yes.
But it tastes slightly different because it's only sheep milk.
Yeah. Okay,
and we mix that as a dessert, we mix that with the pumpkin sweet.
Ah, I see.
So it's a very simple dessert. It doesn't require any cooking at all.
Thank goodness.
And it's so
I'm just going to try it.
It's basically
an explosion
of flavors inside your mouth.
Okay, we're going to experience that right now. Okay, dig that. Very ricotta-esque.
Yes.
With the sheep tang. Got it. Okay, now I'm going in for my fantastic pumpkin sweet, which is truly made with like a big squash. Is that what you mean by the pumpkin?
Yes. The biggest one.
Fantastico.
The ones you used to normally use for the Halloween.
Yes,
so
right.
The big ones.
Now, Sonia, have you spent time in the States? Have you and Pedro been
I've been there once, only
uh-huh.
with Pedro in New York.
Uh-huh, that's my hometown.
Yes, we love New York.
Did you?
We will return there someday.
Mm. Oh, that is great. That is really great.
It's a very simple dessert. Doesn't require any cooking.
No, but I love the sheepy taste of the fresh cheese.
The Portuguese cuisine, as you probably notice, is very conservative in terms of preserving the natural taste of the elements.
Uh-huh.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Now, one thing that the entire time I've been here, which is now 2 weeks, I've over and over again been struck by the extraordinary work of the explorers, the great Portuguese explorers. And I think people forget what an extraordinary world power Portugal was back in its heyday in the 15th, 16th centuries. And so when we went to, there's a big, near the Tower of Belém, there's that big sort of monument, you know, to the explorers, and then they have a map set into the sidewalk that shows you where every expedition went, going back as far as like 1433, I think was the earliest one. India, Africa, you know, Angola, I think Namibia maybe. In any case, all around the African continent.
Yes.
All around India, into Americas. China, the Americas, although you apparently didn't like it so much in the North America. Obviously,
all
Brazil.
The empire was already so spread.
Yeah.
And the population of Portugal has been always very small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all these fleets and all this power, we did had a lack of manpower.
Yeah.
So it was a strategic choice, I think,
yeah,
at the time.
Well, in terms of trade, obviously, these were where you were getting groovy stuff. But what struck me is how much bringing those populations back to Portugal and bringing the spices back and products back, how much that would have an impact on the cuisine, the evolution of cuisine here. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that.
Total impact. We use a lot of species and spices, mm-hmm. Herbs. We started to grow a lot of different vegetables, fruits that were not present in Portugal at the time. So it changed totally the habits of the cuisine in Portugal. Yeah, the potato, yes.
Oh, yeah, the potato, right?
It was not present.
Of course.
It used to be the chestnuts.
Oh, really?
Or the potato.
No kidding.
Yes.
That's amazing. I do see people, sellers here, selling chestnuts and those little clams, mm-hmm. or whatever they are, the little mollusks.
Yes.
What are those called, those shellfish?
We have amêijoa, berbigão.
Your language
Coquinha.
Is so funny.
Oh, there's a world.
Yeah, the language
and
is amazing
also,
here.
Because of the coast of Portugal is so different from the north to the south, we have different species along the coasts.
Yeah.
Have you seen the bark?
The barnacles?
Yeah, the barnacles.
They were so terrifying, I wasn't able to try them. I just couldn't.
So
I had friends
tasty.
Saying that they were just amazing.
I love them. It's
really
so tasty.
Do they taste like fish?
Yes.
Are they fishy?
Yes.
Okay, that's a drag.
They taste like very fresh fish. Very fresh. And the texture, some people don't like exactly the texture. I love them. It's like a chewing gum.
Like a chewing gum.
Yes.
Oh, they're chewy.
Yes.
Like an escargot, kind of. Almost.
Less harder.
Uh-huh.
Escargot,
oh, there's,
yes.
So they're squishier, but chewy. Like
you
a gummy.
Yes, it's a gum, but with meaty inside, so it's very... But we have even stranger than that.
Tell me.
Azores. In Azores, we have one that looks like a rock.
Really?
And the animal is inside in small holes. Like a volcano.
Yeah.
And you have to pick them from the inside. The name is Krakash.
Krakash.
Oh, damn. It's amazing.
Well,
but
thank God you are presenting.
It's very
that.
Weird.
They're terrifying.
And for instance, if you look at the barnacles, you look like it seems that you are eating something from the dinosaur periods.
Totally.
Yes.
Absolutely. And there's also a shell that I've taken many photographs of that has lots, you know, it's like a whelk or a, they're about this big and they have spines sticking off of the shell, but it's a spiral.
Yes.
It's very
lapish.
Pretty.
Lapish.
They're very pretty. Yeah.
Lapish. Also very tasty.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. That's also a bit of shrimp.
Yeah.
They're very tasty. Very popular in up to in Azores, in Madeira, and if you go along the coast north from Lisbon, you have Ericeira and Peniche, which are cities in the coast, and they are very popular, and you can find out.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Some years ago, we had so many of those on the beach that when you when we went to the beach, we used to take them out of the rocks.
Oh, sure.
So, very fresh, and yeah, then cook it at home.
Right, lunch. Right. Well, when we were growing up, we grew up in the same town. Mm. And when we were growing up, we could do that with mussels and clams,
yes,
on our coast
same
as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't do that so much anymore. I don't know why. But anyway, that was a big part of our growing up, was like going musseling or going clamming.
Have you seen one that has a shelf, but it's looked like a big finger?
Yeah, yes. You mean,
yes,
the geoduck clam?
Linguedo.
Yeah.
Linguedo.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have a lot also.
Oh, right. I haven't seen those in any markets, though. That must be a regional specialty.
No, but you can find them.
Oh, yeah?
In some markets.
So let's go back to what we were talking about earlier, which was how the markets are becoming more popular with young people,
yes,
the younger generation. So it's kind of like been, I guess, our generation that turned away from the markets a little bit,
yeah,
because we started working.
Yes, our generation, at least in Portugal, my generation, start to see the growth of the supermarkets.
And yeah.
I think it's somehow it was the perception of the new period of
post-war
rising country, a modern country.
Right.
And I remember having one or two big supermarkets out of Lisbon, just that. And everybody,
right,
was there on weekends to buy it. It was fancy at the time, too.
Yeah.
Now you see the reverse of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people value more the contact with the vendor.
Yeah.
They do value that the vendor knows your name, knows your tastes, can give you some advice on what to buy, what are the products of the season.
Yeah.
They normally tell you how to cook them.
Oh, thank you.
If you find a new product that you never cooked at home, most of them, they know how to, they teach you how to make it.
Yeah.
So it's a proximity shopping,
yeah,
I would say.
Right.
And the young generation are looking for that more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the big supermarkets coming into the town instead of having those big
open markets
yeah, out of the cities, like retail parks, and starting to open small shops. Which leads us to another subject or topic, which is killing the local independent business.
Yeah.
You see the small grocery shops. We had a lot in Lisbon, inside of Lisbon, and they are being less and less every day.
Yeah.
They cannot compete or survive with the prices.
Of course.
And these chains buy in large quantities, so although they have small shops, they buy for hundreds and hundreds of shops at the same time.
I see. Oh, interesting.
So they cannot compete with
and
those.
There's one more question I'm going to ask you, and then, because now you're getting,
yes,
business and everything. We have noticed that everything is made import. Like, you're not importing fruits and vegetables from other countries, it would appear.
No, we are.
You are.
Portugal, yes. Portugal, we are.
Because,
yeah,
we haven't really seen, like, for
here
instance,
we
it
don't.
Was artichoke season in Madrid last year. We literally ate baby artichokes every single day because that's my favorite vegetable. I have not seen any of those. And we went to Corte Inglés, and we bought artichokes there, which,
yeah,
by the way, their supermarket was absolutely incredible, I have,
yes,
to say.
It was
amazing.
I also like it. I go there.
Yeah, not going to lie.
Yeah, the
right.
The variety of products.
Phenomenal.
Amazing. But if you go into the market and you look for a small vendor there,
yeah,
it's amazing the variety of products she has.
Oh, really? We'll take another look. Yeah.
Some markets, old markets, you find vendors there are making a huge effort to bring new products, new flavors. Okay.
Yeah. All right, Sonia, thank you
but
so
I'm doing
much.
What Doesn't Kill You is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at
@heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.